Welcome to The Expert Vet. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host, Dr. Donna Spector in Chicago, who is The Expert Vet. She's a board-certified veterinary internist here to help explain medical conditions in dogs and cats. If you'd like to hear more episodes of this show or any of the Pet Talk radio shows I co-host with experts, please go to RadioPetLady.com and visit the podcast libraries. The Expert Vet is a production of Pet Media, Inc. and Dr. Donna Spector, which are solely responsible for its content. I also produce the Dog Film Festival, which celebrates the love between dogs and their people and the rescue groups that bring them together. Sponsored by a grant from the Petco Foundation, the festival is traveling across the country. You can find more information on the website, dogfilmfestival.com. This show is brought to you with the generous support of Halo, holistic, natural dog and cat foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals. And their new grain-free recipes like Vigor give you even more healthy choices for your pet's dinner, while Daily Greens brings vitamins and digestive enzymes into your dog's diet. Halo is a private company partly owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they emphasize giving back by making donations to shelters through freekibble.com for pets awaiting their forever homes. Dr. Donna, so nice to talk to you again. And we have a topic of the overuse of antibiotics, which is a partial theme that we've talked about before in terms of various ways in which people and vets give antibiotics and then don't finish them as well. But particularly where urinary tract issues come up, where antibiotics are used when they're really not indicated. Can you talk a little bit about that trend and what you see in Chicago in your own clinic or just generally misunderstandings about these UTIs that aren't they're not really infections, are they? They're not, right?
No. And so, I mean, and this is all very, very new kind of updated information that, you know, veterinarians that we're trying to follow, you know, standards created by human infectious disease specialists, because there is urinary tract disease in general is really common in dogs. But it accounts for, and it accounts for significant use of antibiotics, but also overuse and misuse of antibiotics. And then improper antibiotic use is of increasing concern because from a public health standpoint, there is ever increasing antibiotic resistance. And when you really need an antibiotic to work for you and it doesn't because you've misused antibiotics for years and years, I mean, that's what we're really trying to be good stewards of, responsible antibiotic use. So there's really in veterinary medicine, like, you know, this has been happening in human medicine as well. There is a trend toward identifying and characterizing where do bacteria live in the body? Where do they live in many times asymptomatically or subclinically? Like they just live there, but they don't cause infection. And so interestingly, the biggest place in canine and feline medicine is in the urinary tract. And we were all taught as we went through vet school, the urinary tract is sterile. The kidney is sterile. The urinary bladder is sterile. Everything's sterile. Well, that's hokey pokey. That is not actually the truth. The bladder is not a sterile environment. It opens, in, especially in a female dog, it opens to the external environment. Every time they urinate, bacteria can ascend into the urinary bladder, and they just live there peacefully. They don't invade the bladder wall. They don't cause, you know, straining to pee, blood in the urine, white, you know, they don't cause signs of infection. These are called colonizers of the urinary tract. They're just bacteria that symbiotically live in the bladder, and they don't cause problems. And so the name of that is called, and it's, you know, either asymptomatic urine bacteria or subclinical urine bacteria. So the reason this becomes important is because it was very common for veterinarians to recommend screening, you know, when you go in for your annual blood work, you get an annual urine sample.
Correct.
You know, you get your urine and blood sample. Well, when bacteria show up in the urine, we all like knee-jerk kick, like, oh my gosh, there's bacteria. We need to culture that urine and treat with an antibiotic. Okay. So we are attempting to treat our patients, not just their lab results when it comes to this type
well
of bacteria.
Said.
And we're all trying, you know, those of us that are in the know, like we're trying to disseminate this information because it is hard to look a bacteria in the face and say, never mind, I'm not treating you because you're not causing my patient any problems. However, there's a lot of human information on this topic, and It is. This kind of bacteria in the urine is so common in humans. It increases with age. In greater than 50% of older women, geriatric women, have bacteria in the urine at any given time point.
Living in the same benign way that it does in a dog?
Exactly. And so it's not associated with the development of kidney disease, high blood pressure, bladder cancer, decreased survival of any sort. If you actually treat with antibiotics, it doesn't actually decrease the rate of clinical infection. It doesn't prevent, as soon as the antibiotic is done, those bacteria just say, well, I'm supposed to live in the bladder. So they come right back.
Wow.
And in addition, the treatment of these bacteria, it can lead to actual infections of something bigger and badder, or the development of antibiotic resistant bacteria. So we've been really making the push toward identifying which groups of dogs and cats are more likely to have this kind of asymptomatic bacteria, and, you know, and identify them and say, don't routinely check those patients unless they're having clinical signs.
Okay. So in other words, do not do the urine culture, or go ahead and do it, but then do not go the further step to culture it further. In other words, that urine sample that in theory everyone's supposed to give once a year to look for health, I guess it's looking for, what's it looking for in the urine besides bacteria? Are you looking like in people for sugar? Are you looking for protein? What are you looking for?
All those things. So we look for the ability of the kidneys to concentrate the urine. So it can be an early marker of kidney disease, because if you're losing the ability to concentrate your urine, you're like, that's probably interesting. We look for protein, also another early marker of kidney disease. We look for sugar for signs of diabetes or prediabetes. We look for other elements in the urine that shouldn't be there. Again, usually indicators of kidney disease. We look for bacteria, we look for white blood cells, red blood, I mean, all those, because early, like bladder tumors, kidney tumors, things can show up in a urine sample. But more than anything, we're looking for overall kidney health, making sure diabetes isn't at play, those kinds of things. But the point is, let's say you have your healthy dog, you take in, blood work is done, and a urine sample is done. The vet gets right on the phone and says, Tracy, we have a problem. She has bacteria in her urine.
Right.
We should culture this.
Right.
And you say, and so this is where I think our well-informed listeners will say, okay, that's fine. We can culture it, because it's good to know what is in there. Is it an E. coli? Is it this? Is it that? You're not wrong to culture it and identify it. But then that's where we stop, because we say, my dog has no signs of infection. She's not straining to pee. There's no blood in her urine. She has no clinical signs of urinary tract disease. She's likely just a dog that is colonized with bacteria, so we'll just stop here, thanks. You know, we don't treat. We don't, and I know that's so hard to do. It's hard for owners. It's hard for vets. And so, consequently, a lot of dogs get treated with antibiotics unnecessarily.
Well, what about stepping back one step and saying, I actually don't want to culture because
that's
my dog has no symptoms. Why do we want to go to that expense and then have to have a conversation about what not to do?
Yes, that is, I mean, at this point, I mean, the only reason you would culture is to say so we knew what the bacteria is. But I do avoid routine screening of urine cultures in asymptomatic dogs. And that is, by and large, the recommendation.
But that's the current recommendation that many vets, like so many things, it's just so hard to keep up on the changes in recommendations.
Right.
Many vets are still in that, I'm guessing from what you're saying, that mode that they had starting in vet school where looking at bacteria in the eye, that's your enemy.
Right. And, like, I'll give you some numbers here. So there have been multiple studies now done even in dogs. I mean, and these studies are in 2014, 15, 16. I mean, they're brand new. They're just in the last couple of years. They've looked at hundreds of dogs. And in general, if you just screen healthy client-owned dogs, you know, a few hundred of them, about 10% are going to have bacteria in the urine at any given time point, just right off the bat. Now, even young dogs, like going in for surgery or this or that, I mean, it's a little lower, 2-5%, but then in dogs that are on like long-term steroids, they receive like Atopica for allergies. In the biggest group is obese dogs, morbidly obese dogs. 30% of those dogs carry bacteria asymptomatically in their bladder. And it kind of makes sense, because these dogs, you know, they're often lower to the ground. They've got a lot of fat rolls. There's a lot of, like, you know, bacteria that live in the folds of the vulva around the penis. And those, you know, those bacteria just go right up, and they just, but they live happily in the bladder. They don't cause a problem. They just sit there. Now, granted, if a dog has signs of straining to urinate and other signs, I mean, yes, then you have to go that next step. But we're talking about dogs that are completely asymptomatic. And so this is an onus on the owner to also say, if your vet has called you and said, Tracy Hotchner, your dog has bacteria in the urine, and you say, well, she has no signs, I'm not going to treat. The onus is on you to follow her outside and make sure you watch her pee.
Right, good point.
That in the snow is great. You know, does she have a little blood in the urine? Is it a little discolored? Does she actually squat multiple times and acting like she's a little painful? Because our gut reaction is, my dog doesn't have a problem. My dog, she's going to be fine. She's fine. There's no problem. But you really do have to observe urination. You know, I'm guilty of that. Like, Gabby runs off a gazillion miles away, and she's over there doing her business. You know, I'm not standing right on top of her. She could be straining a little bit. So it's important that you monitor your dog's urination, especially if your vet says, you know, there are some bacteria here. We want to make sure that this is not a problem. But there is no proof that treating dogs like that, that have that asymptomatic bacteria, those bacteria usually come right back after treatment, because again, they're kind of like meant to be there. They're not a problem for the dog. Treating it, leaving the bacteria there makes them no more likely to get bladder infections. It makes them no more likely to get kidney infections, no more likely to have any other, you know, problem with those bacteria. But it is a hard pill, so to speak, for a vet to swallow. It's like, it is against our grain to, like, leave a bacteria untreated.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk briefly about a topic that is just so hard for all of us, I think, on both sides of the exam table, which is having a different opinion about how to do something than your vet, and then you have to justify it. And listening to the expert vet is actually probably better justification than reading any book that's written, because you do such an amazing job of staying up on current thinking. But let's talk a little bit about giving people the support and encouragement to not necessarily question authority, but come with an attitude or an opinion that isn't offensive, but does maybe reflect something they may have learned that their vet may not yet know. We're going to take a quick break. This show is brought to you by Halo Holistic Natural Dog and Cat Foods, which are made with only whole meats, never any rendered meat meals like chicken meal or byproduct meal. Dogs love meat, and cats are obligate carnivores, so optimum nutrition starts with meat that their bodies can best utilize. With responsibly sourced ingredients slow-cooked in small batches, independent tests have shown Halo foods are highly digestible, so your pet's bodies can absorb the nutrients. When you feed your pet Halo food, at the same time you'll be nourishing less fortunate shelter pets, because for every purchase you make, Halo gives a bowl of food to shelters. Support for this show also comes from VaxaCheck, a simple test done right in your vet's office to discover whether your dog or puppy is protected from the deadly core diseases or needs revaccination. If you are among the people concerned about over-vaccinating your pet, whether young or old, VaxaCheck can help you and your veterinarian make the best decision about vaccinating in your individual situation. Shelters can use VaxaCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones and avoid unnecessarily over-vaccinating dogs. VaxaCheck for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And VaxaCheck for cats is coming soon. We're back. Dr. Donna, your advice is really great, and you, of course, have, being the board-certified internist at a clinic, you might even have to contradict or have a different opinion than regular vets in the practice, or certainly people mm-hmm. who come from other practices come to you as an internist who is really the detective of the veterinary field. And so you are sort of in the position that some of we owners are, which is to say, I'm sure you meant well, but doctor. And mm-hmm. and how let's talk a little about the awkwardness of that, the challenge of that, and yet the importance for both health and economics of mm-hmm. bringing to the table as owners what the little that we know from you, or in your case, the lot that you know that you have to diplomatically express to another vet.
Right. I think, you know, first coming from the owner side of things is, you know, maybe you've been listening to expert vet all along. Maybe you've heard of a topic. And so maybe you do, a pet owner at one particular time point may know more about a certain topic than their vet. I
yes.
mean, that is a possibility. And so we'll use this topic as an example. So, you know, it's never wrong, and always common sense should be used. If your doctor is saying, oh, your dog has an infection, in this case, in the urinary bladder, and, you know, needs to go on antibiotics, the common sense says, well, my dog has no signs. How could it?
Right.
You know, can you explain to me? It's okay to question, like, the rationale and to say, I'm fine to treat a urinary tract infection. That sounds great. But how is it then that she has no signs? Is there something, you know, is there something, could you look in? And I always advise people could you look into it a little further? Do you have someone, you know, is there like a local specialist that you can call just to get an opinion, you know, as opposed to like trying to share your own opinion?
Right. That's a problem.
Some people feel threatened by.
Yes.
It's okay to say, it just doesn't make sense to me that she has absolutely no signs of a severe infection. That seems unusual. You know, could you call someone and seek a second opinion? You know, and every vet uses a lab that people like me sit on the other end, and we give
right.
opinions all day long. They usually have a local specialist. And while it may be a little bit awkward, you're advocating for your pet. You know, I mean, and that's what it comes right down to is. So I always say, if something doesn't feel right, just question it, but question it in a non-combative way.
I guess, you know, yes. And the other thing that you pointed out really well is that if we as owners try to parrot back what we've learned on this show, we've learned from you or from somewhere else, but God, people, do not go to Dr. Google, because you will just be hanging out in the wind at the end of that day. But if we try to repeat what you've told us, and we understand the logic of it, and we are sold on your thinking and on your process, a thought process, at that moment of trying to explain it, although it, in itself it's offensive to some vets that a lay person is trying to explain something they don't know, we're not going to do it well anyway. So if they ask us one more question, we don't have an answer. We just know this one thing we learned. So I think that advice is even more important, because really what we've learned is to say, this is not probably good medicine or more modern or current thinking medicine. Mm-hmm. And just to say, it doesn't make sense. Could you look into it? Could you check on that? Could you check with the lab on that, or wherever they might get a second opinion?
Right.
And
exactly.
And that, I think that's not a bad idea with human doctors too. I mean, often mm-hmm. human doctors are much more rushed in my experience than vets. They mm-hmm. have very little time, and they will dispense all kinds of things, whether it's, you know, antidepressants to people or even mm-hmm. antibiotics to people mm-hmm. without just knee jerk, like write a script mm-hmm. and on their way. And if mm-hmm. we could learn to say, I'm not really that comfortable taking this because I don't want to have antibiotic resistance at some point. Can you explain to me why I really need this? I think that
it
teaches us to do
having,
yes.
Yeah, in the face of a patient not having any signs. And then like they have to respond to that, you know, it's
right.
sort of like, and you know, when I deal with it, I, at my level and at my end, again, I just try to use a non-confrontational sort of approach and to say, you know, that sandwich technique, right? Like I see what their thought process was. I see where, what they've done. And, you know, I try to pick out something really good that, you know, you've done a really nice job here by giving the urine sample
yes.
and the culture. And let me share some of the newest thoughts that, you know, and I often like, quote unquote, blame it on someone else. Like, well, there are some new guidelines from the, you know, ISCID's guidelines. And I'm going to send you a link so you can take your time. But this is the general, you know, the general
right.
gist is that, you know, a patient like this without any clinical signs, we actually wouldn't treat. And then I try to commiserate a little bit. Like, I know that seems crazy and it's really hard for me to do
right,
it too.
Right.
But I try to take that sort of like, you're not wrong that you didn't know, but now you know. And now you have the tools that you need to go going forward.
Well,
you know?
Just that's a great way of putting it for us in our situation. Would you – we'll take a quick break, but I wonder whether you think that a link to that study or more recent studies is something I could include in this podcast so that people listening could actually have it and that they could ask their vet, would you be interested in me forwarding a paper that's actually a professional paper? So we're going to mm-hmm. take a quick break. When we come back, let's see if you think that would be even more offensive to a vet or of great interest. We'll be right back. Mm-hmm. This show is made possible in part by Precious Cat Litter, owned by Dr. Elsie, who has his own cats-only clinic in Colorado. He has devoted his life to inventing innovative litters for the health of all members of the family, and now has broken new ground by creating a healthy, dry, and canned food for kitties called Clean Protein. Clean Protein was inspired by the protein levels found in a cat's natural prey, and 90% of the protein in the Clean Protein kibble and cans is animal-based. Not the plant-based ingredients in traditional dry cat food like grains, potato, vegetables, and fruits that are high in oxalate and lead to rapid metabolization, which actually increases your cat's hunger. The primary ingredients in Dr. Elsie's Clean Protein are the highest biological value proteins available, and the result is that your cat's appetite is satisfied longer without compromising her health. If you want to feed dry food to your cat, even as part of her diet, make the healthier choice. The proof is in the protein, Clean Protein. This show is also brought to you by Best Pet RX, a unique compounding pharmacy for pets in New York City. They can turn any medication for dogs and cats into a custom-flavored oral paste, chewable tablet, or a liquid that your pet will actually like. And Best Pet RX will keep trying formulations at no extra charge and offers same-day delivery in New York City and overnight delivery anywhere else so that your pet can happily take the medicine she needs to get well and stay well. Okay, to wrap up, Dr. Donna, what about a link that you would give as a professional who works with labs where many doctors across the country at VCA come to you with a situation they cannot resolve on their own? Mm-hmm. You send them a link, and a link to a paper and new studies mm-hmm. and guidelines, and that's great. What do you think about owners having access to that link in order to share it with their providers?
Yeah, absolutely. A very helpful place that I send a lot of people is this. It's called ISCID, and it stands for International Society for Companion Animal Infectious Diseases.
Wow.
ISCID. So there is a society.
ISCAID.edu or org?
And it's .org. So it's ISCAID.org.
Okay.
And right there on the homepage, like, latest news.
Oh.
And it says urinary guidelines available free. Click here.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's super simple to access. So that is all about asymptomatic bacteria, when to treat UTIs, even if your dog has a basic UTI, how to treat it, and then if it has a complicated UTI. I mean, so those are some
That's great.
So those are great things. And then there's pet owner resources there. There's all sorts of things on that page. And when you start poking around there, you're like, wow, a lot of things get treated that probably shouldn't. But urinary stuff is such a huge one. That's why I thought we'll bring it to light, because we're going to talk soon about actual bladder infections
yes.
and managing those as well.
This is great. It's really informative, and I think it empowers us to think twice and just to question sort of common practice. And in the end, very good for all of us and our individual dogs and our own vets who... You're helping us help them do the very best job they can. Thanks, Dr. Donna.
You're welcome.